M1 is the finance super app where you can invest, borrow, save, and spend all in one place. You set your strategy, and they automate it for free in an easy-to-use app. M1 is making money management easier, smarter, and more automated than ever. If you're like me and you struggle to make time for investing, or anything really, M1 is the best set-it-and-forget-it investing app I've ever used. Go to m1finance.com/Katoon to get started today and earn $30 to invest after you fund your account. Terms and conditions apply. M1, yours to build. Welcome to Technori Podcast. I'm Scott Katoon. Today's show, we catch up with the one and only Darren Revelle. You probably know Darren Revelle from his ESPN days covering the business side of sports. He's now at Action Network, where he covers betting. You're probably familiar with Fading Revelle if you're into sports betting. If you're into collections, however, you're just more familiar with Darren on Twitter, at Darren Revelle, where he literally goes through some of the most mind-blowing card steals of the century, PSA 1s, PSA 8s, PSA 10s, signature collections, magazine collections, shoe collections. I'm sure he collects watches. I don't even know. Artifacts, the most random things this dude collects and makes, I think, probably a fortune on it. And I am definitely, he's got my attention. Like, Darren has had my attention for a while, to be honest. We both went to Northwestern, so there's a connection there. My very first Medill, it's probably my only publishing now that I think about it. Medill and me didn't get along so well then. But bottom line is, one of the first bylines that I ever had included Darren Revelle on it. We were so excited. We were covering the Q3 2012 Under Armour earnings report, and somehow we got Darren Revelle to take a phone call with us and talk and give us a quote. And it made it into my story at Northwestern Medill Reports, and it was pretty much the only thing I left with that I was excited about. And to fast forward almost 10 years later and be talking to Darren Revelle in this manner on my show, I think is maybe one of the more cool milestones of my career, not to overblow it. But as a person who's an action junkie and a person who's a collector junkie, I kind of nerd out with stuff like this. And I've definitely built a reputation investing in junkyard companies and acquiring micro acquisitions and looking at startups and stonks, if you will, and crypto, just different opportunities. I like to put money in play because I don't like to work for people, really. I don't take orders well. I don't really learn well. I'm not all that coachable. So for me, it's freedom. And I see a guy like Darren who, in my mind, is living his best life. Like, this dude's life looks like a dream boat to me. He lives life like a child. And if you listen and watch the podcast, you kind of get that feeling that he's enjoying life as much as it seems like he's enjoying life, which, how could you not? Your life is covering what you love, collecting and doing what you love, but you're basically covering himself. Like, really? I mean, at the end of the day, he's covering himself. And so this podcast, for me, it's nerdy. For you, I think there's a lot to learn. I think if I had to take one takeaway from this entire podcast, and you have to listen to it because there's so many good tidbits, both about trading and investing, but also looking at collectibles and how do you value something and how do you know when it's overvalued and undervalued? All that stuff is in here. You got to listen. My number one takeaway: I am super long on physical. I know we're going to talk about NFTs next week. We've been talking about crypto a lot and sort of digital art. What I am long on after listening to this conversation, and I suspected that I felt this way, but he confirmed it, that in a future where everyone is playing virtual world, physical items are king. The idea that you could have a vintage Jordan card, or you could be wearing a throwback jersey, or you have something physical that Jackie Robinson signed in person in the 50s, and it's 2026, and you're a kid that doesn't know shit about what happened in 2006 even. There's something about that tangible feeling of something that I think is going to get even more valuable. And I think if anything, we learned with COVID that you value certain possessions for a reason. Prices are inflated for a reason. People don't have anything to do. They got a little bit of cash. They're bored. They're trying to keep their brains going. After COVID, I think you're going to have probably a little bit of a dip in all these markets, but I think you're going to see some people who stick around and they learn a lot, and it's kind of hard not to. And so for me personally, I listen to Darren on his show, and I listen and I read Darren and I follow him and others also in this space. One of my co-founders literally flips, you know, tennis shoes and PS5s all day long. Who knew? I think one of the things that stands out to me in this is that I'm going to be in the future spending a lot more time collecting assets, really anything that has any leverage, anything that guy can make money on. I think I'm in on that. I think the key to financial freedom is getting yourself away from worlds that are rules written, getting into a world where like shit can just happen. Like the card world right now, it's craziness. You're missing out if you're not in it. And if you're slow or new to the market, then this is the podcast for you. So here is the podcast of me drooling and nerding out with the one and only Darren Revell. Darren Revell, what is going on, my friend? How are you doing?
I am crazed. I think what happened with COVID and changing our lives and needing to pump ourselves with adrenaline and dopamine, you know, everything I do became heightened to a point where how could it even be more heightened than it already is in terms of sports gambling and memorabilia? I mean, just insanity, total insanity, including my family yelling at each other.
I can hear the family. Mine is in the
yelling
background.
At each other in the background or whatever it is. You know, my three kids go to school while all this is going on. You know, like I have twin boys who are in first grade, and every day at 8:41, it's January, February, March, and April. I mean, I'm literally in a madhouse.
I literally did back-to-back lawyer-investor calls today with Daddy Daycare. I did one pitch with a 20-month-old on my lap, spilling shit everywhere.
your door looks, I'm jealous about how secure your door looks.
It only looks that way. If you go to my Twitter, the top banner is a picture of my kid going like this underneath the door. She can fit damn near everything she's got underneath the door. So it just seems that way.
It just looks, I'm jealous of how hermetically sealed it is.
It does look good from that perspective.
Yeah. But anyway, we're in crazy town. I mean, I just think we're in a world right now where we have to pump ourselves up with just whatever we need because we don't have human interaction. And I think it's been good for our mental health. The amount of time we're spending on eBay and betting, even if it's cost us money, because we've just never seen a time like this in our lives. And I know it's been good for me too.
I couldn't agree more with you. I think, you know, there's a couple parts to this. There's also the investing and the craziness with Robinhood and so forth. At the top of this show, we peddle M1. I've been a big fan of M1 forever. And that to me is like the opposite of Robinhood. That's the patience and patient game. I think a lot of people are learning about stocks and learning about cards and trading and money and things. And I don't anticipate this craziness to continue post COVID. I think there'll be some calm, but I do think there's a lot of people who are kind of in this for a while. The ones that get whipped off after the bull comes will be what it is. But I think a lot more people are going to be doing this for a while. I know, you know, just personally, obviously I run different businesses, this being one of them, but I found, and not just because we're in a bull, I found that I can make a decent amount of money playing trading cards, trading shoes, trading watches, stocks, and so forth. And Bitcoin, obviously, as long as that stays where it is.
But there's two calls here, Scott. There's two calls here. So one of them that I think is, you know, like how real is this market? So everyone says, okay, obviously real that you get real money. But what people are asking is long-term, how real is this market? And, you know, I'm just telling people I'm cashing out of some things. Yes. I'm making other moves. I think the one thing that you don't want to be is a follower. You do not want to follow here. And I think with everything, I'm glad that people are learning the market. I mean, I'm not glad that they're learning that you can put, you can take a blank vessel like GameStop and AMC. And
I was hoping for Blockbuster, I got to tell you.
Yeah. It would have been Blockbuster, right? Anything with a dirty carpet with goober stains on it and call it a blue chip company. I mean, that's pretty damn scary. But I'll tell you, like, you know, it's interesting. Anyone who says the market was fair to begin with, I worked at CNBC for 6 years and sports betting's a whole lot fairer than the market. I can tell you that. It's not even close. There's a winner. There's a loser. There's more information. It's like you win because they beat or a company, your company that you were betting on beats earnings. And then all of a sudden it's like, wait, They didn't beat the whisper number, though. I thought they would have done better than what we thought they would have done. And it's like, what? And if the wrong person says something, pulls out of the press release one piece they don't like. Nike's up big. But you know what? What really concerns me, and especially if it's someone on CNBC, what really concerns me is, look at those future orders on China. That's their biggest market. And all of a sudden, boom, we're going down.
I'm telling you, and you spend more time in this even than I do. I'm more on the startup side of things, but I pulled most of my money out with the exception of the stocks that I am long in regardless, the Teslas and things like that. Like I made a fortune on Tesla this year, as a lot of people did. The companies, basically, I'll say this, once I could no longer look at a chart and it meant anything to me, there was no fundamental understanding of what was going on, which has been the case for a long time, but really quite literally, about, you'd kind of argue before the pandemic, almost in November, things don't make sense.
Well, that's a really interesting point, because there are so many people, more people than I expect, who are okay with things not making sense.
Yeah, I'm not.
That is one thing you should not, if you're listening here, you should not be okay with things not making sense. And that's even things in the sports memorabilia market. So yes. Like right now, like I'm cashing out of my 1994 Bumblebee Tuna Rock rookie, because if you're not okay with buying it at what it's currently at, then you're not okay. Yeah. And I'm not okay with something I paid $730 for on June 29th being worth at least $25,000. I'm not buying that for $25,000.
Talk a little bit more about that stuff, because we talk all the time of stocks and Bitcoin and stonks and all this craziness and startups and things. I am like super, I know that things are crazy now and they're probably going to start going back downward at some point very shortly here. But
I do think the major discussion is post-COVID, how many businesses change, right? So like as an investor in startups, you're getting pitched ghost kitchens. And it's like, okay, ghost kitchens, right? Like, and I'm getting pitched that. And it's like, all right, are we going to go with the way that we've been going for so long now? Or are we going to absolutely revolt and go to a bar every day or go to a restaurant every day? Because we're like, oh my God, I just haven't seen this place. I got to get back.
I think if we go the other way,
a lot of people who are investing now in what they think is a COVID change business are completely screwed.
I think you're going to see a false plateau. If you're talking startup world, like I think that there's a bunch of changes, the digital gift market, which I'm very heavily in between Cameo and Songfinch and a few things like that stuff, I think is going to stay. Remote work from home, all these different cool things that make life easier, going to stay, maybe a little different. It'll change. But I think there's a false plateau. Everyone's like, oh man, ghost kitchens. I think it will be a thing. I just think it's going to be like 2 or 3 years after people get done partying their brains out. Like we've been locked up forever.
And the way you look at those businesses, they're not that good to begin with.
It's razor thin at best.
Okay. Sorry. You were saying we were talking about collectibles or getting,
it's all good. This is the life, man. We bounce around it. I just think that this is like the coolest part about all this. And what I love about following you is it gives me exposure into anything. Like I am an action junkie. If there is a possible margin, I'm betting on it. Like that's happening. And I think cards is part of it. I think all of this is. I'd love to share with our audience the other side of the world. All I see the racks of shoes behind you and hats and all the stuff. Like what's the collectibles world? What share your world with my world.
Yeah, well, I'm always looking for arbitrage, right? Like I'm always looking for the worst auction house. The auction house that doesn't know how to describe something in their description. The auction house that is selling one thing, is good to sell one thing and has a database of people that they sell to, and they're selling something that does not make sense. I'll give you an example. There was a costume auction place that was selling the rudder that Buzz Aldrin used to steer the command module to the moon. Okay. Now... if that is not in a space auction, I'm gonna be in on that because automatically it's going for lower than it should. I know it from like I don't even need to. The thing had two or three bids. I think ultimately we paid $256,000 for it, or something $300,000 for it. And that was it. And it was like, you know, it's like, God, it's a $2 million, $3 million, $4 million piece. Like there's no debate about it. Now, where I go is I go into markets that are not as liquid as cards and I take the risk.
Yeah.
But I take the risk at much fewer, at where the dollars are much fewer. And again, it doesn't make sense. So I own the largest authenticated Warren Buffett signature in the world. It's 1.5 feet on a on a bed of uncirculated dollar bills from the Kansas City Treasury.
I hope if now, nothing from this podcast, that gets to the aggregators and it's like a known fact about Darren Revell. He owns the largest Warren Buffett autograph.
Yeah. So to me, you know, when Warren Buffett passes away, that piece, like, what is that piece? Like, you know, knowing some rich people, like, I don't know. I can tell you it's not worth less than $150,000. I mean, between the guys comparing the size of their genitals, you know, and they want to say, look right there, you know, that's the largest.
I don't even have that much money. And honestly, I'm about to bid on it, to be totally
right. Well, but that's what I'm saying. It's like, you know, what do you get where people go? Like, so you look at cards. I have items. My goal of to get items are items where, and this is not going to good for a podcast, so you're going to have to describe what I'm doing. Oh, I want items where when I show people items, they go, you know, totally like their mouth gaping open, being like, that is the, I have 50 items where people go, that is the craziest thing I've ever seen. So, you know, I think I like to be ahead. Right now, I've dwindled down to about 5% cards, and I'll probably be at zero in the next 3 or 4 months.
I would imagine so. I mean, it's
because I'm taking things off the table. I'm taking things off the table. And by the way, people are like, well, would you have any regrets? And this is where people miss it. If it sells for more in the future, the reason why I don't have regrets is because the value of the, it's not just the money. So the Rock card, one supposedly sold for 90,000, a PSA 10 of this Rock card, his University of Miami card, sold for $90,000. So $90,000 for a PSA 10. Mine's a PSA 9. It's up right now on eBay. I thought it would at least sell for 25,000. Maybe now it's 35,000, 40,000. Okay. It's not just the 40,000. It's that I'm now going to take that 40,000 and put it into something that no one's paying attention to because they're buying the Rock card. Right. So it's not an absolute $40,000.
It's just a game. I mean,
it's a game.
Yeah.
And I'm playing it all day long. And I'm, you know, so it's basically like, it's either gambling or it's with memorabilia. I feel like I'm playing a children's game, that the whole thing is a joke.
I want in on this so bad. I want to go garage shopping with you. I want to go to garage sales.
It's
with
basically high end garage shopping.
I know. Right?
Like, and but a lot of it is like, again, it's like, what are people not seeing? You know, so like, and I'll make a list of things like as I start to collect tickets. So with tickets, right? Like, I need, and I'm thinking like, what do I need? Okay, I need Bo running over Bosworth ticket. I need the ticket to that game. I need the ticket for Jesse Owens becoming the fastest man in the world in front of Hitler. I need that ticket, right? And then all of a sudden I'm like, let's see, what else do I need? Oh, I need Marilyn Monroe singing Happy Birthday, Mr. President ticket at Madison Square Garden to JFK, right? And so, and then I find out it's the most colorful, amazing ticket in the, you know. So while I'm taking out of cards, I'm going into tickets. I'm going into sealed video games. I'm going into sealed music, sealed toys, sealed iPhones. Like, you know, like where am I going next? And then when that mark comes in, I'm going next into something else and I'm out.
How do you not have some sort of TV show based on this yet? Because there's a show for like every person who does this kind of shit elsewhere.
And it's probably coming. It's probably coming.
It should. Because it's like,
I don't like to reveal too much of where I am though. Like, right. So like, I don't want,
it's not good for business. You don't want people to start getting ahead of it.
Now. And I also don't want to be the guy who pumped up the business either. I don't want to be a pumper and dumper. But I do want to talk about things like tickets. Love tickets. They're going away. You'll never see another sports ticket again. Now it's definitely going to be all digital.
I'm staring at 267 Cardinal World Series tickets on the table right
there
over
here. There
you go. They're probably worthless, but they're cool. Looks cool.
But yeah, so tickets are there. video games, anything with nostalgia. In COVID, we're going back to when times are good. When times were good, when we're going, our people are cleaning their closets of things. Everyone's, the video games thing to me made so much sense. And there's a grading company called WADA that just makes them so beautiful. So I start learning the market. I'm like, oh my God, okay. So there's sealed video games. Who the hell got a video game for Hanukkah or Christmas and didn't open it?
Yeah.
Right. And then you're like, holy crap, there can't be more than 30 of these. How unless there's, it's found in a warehouse. And so how you're thinking about
card punch outs are floating around in their Nintendo sleeve.
You're thinking about card populations and you're like, what? I'm going to go buy the best NBA Jam sealed in the world. And like, you know, for like $3,000. And like, if the video game market ever pops, and listen, some of these are shots I'm taking. Yeah. The video game market ever pops, I own the best graded NBA Jam in the world. And what would that be worth, right? And then going on to, I mean, my check collection's the most absurd thing, is kind of my, like, that is the most absurd thing you've ever seen in your life, right? And the way that came out was, please, about five. I can't
tell you. I'm just like loving every second. This is the best podcast I've ever.
You
feel like
you have to pay me for this?
Oh, I might. I'll give you a check that's not as worth as the. It doesn't belong in your collection, but.
So we'll be partners one day. So 5 years ago, I went to a card show and the guy handed me 60 Barciamatti checks. And I'm like, how much are they? He's like, oh, they're $50 each. And I'm like, why would they be $50 each if one of them was like the Pete Rose investigation and another was him going to the Holiday Inn? Like, and then I realized, boom, eureka, light bulb goes off in my head being like, oh my God, people only collect checks because they feel better about the autograph being authentic. They actually don't care at all about what the story of the check is. Oh my God, I'm going to collect 100 checks that have stories. So I have Amelia Earhart paying for nose surgery. Wow. And I have Denzel Washington paying for his Lakers courtside seats. And I have Marlon Brando getting paid for Guys and Dolls. And I have Babe Ruth paying for the equivalent of $14,000 in alcohol. And I have, and it goes, and I have Larry David signing a check that wasn't even made out to him. You know, a literal Curb Your Enthusiasm episode.
Oh my God.
I have Reggie Jackson buying his World Series tickets to the 77 World Series 4 days before he became Mr. October. And it goes on, and I have John F. Kennedy paying for his subscription to the Washington Post 4 months before he became president. And so I am paying for since I'm the only guy in the world doing this, I'm paying for the autograph, right? The JFK autograph is sick. So I paid $7,500 for it because it's a great autograph and it's on a check. But the auctioneer never says it's him subscribing to the Washington Post, like, because that doesn't get, so I'm playing a game in that when I sell this Darren Revelle check collection, I'm going to sell it all at once. I'm going to make a one of one coffee table book. They'll have all the stories and here's your entire collection. And I'll 10X what I paid because I'm the only guy in the world doing it.
That is so, like, first off, you must rent space at Fort Knox because the storage unit, I'm not even going to ask because I'm not going to be
there are many combinations. There's many insurance policies
scattered throughout the U.S. You'll never catch me.
I mean, my one problem is I like to show these things. So the shuffling in and out becomes an issue.
Yeah, I would imagine so. Well, I would guess you could probably get away with like a B-list collection of things, and that's still pretty show worthy.
But so that's the checks, and then the tickets, and then the video games, and then sealed music, and then there's maybe a one-off thing or two that I see. Oh, I was in space for a while. I pretty much got out of space. I bought a New York Times signed by the three Apollo 11 guys, the only one for $28,000, and flipped it on the 50th anniversary. For a nice profit. I flip on anniversaries. So I have my Excel spreadsheet where when an item allows me to talk about it because it's in the news or an anniversary. So now I'm working on 35 anniversaries, all coming up this year. So I'm working on Top Gun and Ferris Bueller, trying to get the best items there. So I trade on news. I update things. When Jeff Bezos decided to step down from Amazon, I went on eBay and bought as many Jeff Bezos signed items as possible. He is an impossible signature right now. And you can bet when he's not working for a company and he is going from a private car to a private jet to a private island, you will never be able to get him. Yeah. So, you know, and then the other thing that I have is I have guys who I know who can certify autographs in 30 seconds. And I can say, hey, is this good or not? You know, like I'm playing a child's game. That's what I am. And it's so fun.
I'm very jealous of that. I rarely say that to people I talk to because I feel like I'm playing a kid's game. I talk to founders all day long and I track news, trends, and I invest based on what I hear and just what I know to be logical. And I'm just starting to get into, like I used to do cards all the time, like cards and games and things like that. Poker was one thing that I was always very good at too. But I'm starting to get back into it because I have the time and I have a little bit of liquidity now where it's like, okay, well, let's fuck around a little bit. And, you know, I guess the question I have for you as we kind of pivot off of this is we're talking about digital, you know, digital assets and things. We've got.
So you're asking me, have I gotten into buying virtual land and digital art and stuff like that?
Well, yeah, I was leaning into it. I have the CoinDesk guy coming on next week to talk about NFTs.
Okay. So, I am in a bad place in that state because I have now learned enough not to be ignorant. I can tell you I understand everything now with that market, right? The one thing I've always promised myself is if I don't invest in something, it's not going to be because I chose not to learn about it.
Yep.
So I understand it all. I am now dealing with the situation of what is my strategy as things become more digital? And right now my answer is to become more physical, not to become more digital. And one of the anecdotes is, you know, for Martin Luther King's birthday, I believe I have, you know, one of the best Martin Luther King items in the world. It's him. A guy was sitting next to him on a United flight in 1963, about 60 days after his I Have a Dream speech, and signed the United ticket folder. And for my daughter on her Zoom for her third grade class, I showed the ticket folder. And I was just weirded out by the kids' reactions. They actually were not focused on the Martin Luther King autograph. They were focused on, is that paper from 1963? And I was like, what? Like, why are they? And I'm thinking, oh, like, because they are so into the digital world that they're focused on the physical item. They want to know if that's that old. And to me, I was like, holy crap, right? I'm like, holy crap. Like, so to me, it's like, you know what? Maybe everyone's saying that these kids are only going to be into digital. Well, maybe you're wrong.
They're going to be
wrong.
The one kid who's floating around with old school MJs or a jersey throwback, they're going to be the cool kid because they're the one person that actually has vintage.
So I don't know yet. Top Shot has kind of changed my world in terms of I've never seen in my 20 years of covering the business of sports as many people curious about one thing in such short period of time. All I'll say to anyone listening who's not into crypto or blockchain or anything, I would say to you that just never dismiss. And I think where I've made mistakes is dismissing things that I didn't understand and not trying to understand them. People lost years not getting on Twitter because they're like, I don't want to know what you have for lunch. Like, yeah. You know, Clubhouse right now sucks, man. The content is so horrible. 95% of the conversations are douchebags bloviating
so
about how they made their first million. And it's people sitting with four or five phones, follower and clout collecting, and it's just gross. But guess what? 1% is really good shit. Yeah. Really good. Right?
The Twitter Spaces isn't terrible either. But now that I know tonight when I go on Clubhouse and I tell everyone I made my first million by buying the largest Jeff Bezos autograph of all time, they're going to lose their shit and it's going to break.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but you know, I think that's something. Just don't dismiss things just because, you know, you don't know about it. But it's just, I don't know. I feel like, I like to do a lot of things that are counterintuitive. I think my whole life has been marked by people saying, well, you know, like, I'm going to cover the business of sports. Well, you do sports to get away from business, or, you know, so like when everyone started when all the money started to go to the PSA 10 Jordans, I said, I'm going to collect the fuck out of PSA 1 Jordans.
Yeah.
I want the Jordans with the pinholes in it. I want the Jordans that were literally put in the bicycle spokes. I want the Jordans that have gum stains on it or whatever it is. Right. And the funny thing is, you know, I was buying Jordans at $1,600 that were ones, and now you can't get one for less than a record's going to be set tonight for a Jordan 1, which is going to be, and for anyone who doesn't know the space, it's basically 1 out of 10 and 1 is the junk. Yeah. The highest sale of a 1 is going to go today, probably end at $5,000. So if I buy the ones, and then what you realize is when you're an elitist and you're making millions of dollars, all these people are buying the tens being like, oh, the tens are going to continue to go up. They forget about the world where someone just wants the artwork of the Jordan and they'll pay $5,000 because that's all they can afford. And most of America can't afford $1,000 for a card. And so I started doing these PSA ones. And then my idea was, oh my God, I'm going to do a PSA one set of the best 25 cards in the last 50 years. And I'm going to put it in a shoebox as if you discovered it in your mother's basement. So I got an old shoebox like this.
Awesome.
It's basically a Converse 1984 shoebox. And I got the Gordie Howe rookie in a one and the Hank Aaron rookie in a one and the Wayne Gretzky rookie in a one. And, you know, I'll still 3X it. I'm not sleeping at night. The reason why I haven't been in crypto is because I am gambling all day long. At least when I close my pretty eyes at night, I'd like for something not to be happening. And with crypto, I can't wake up in the morning and check things. I just can't. I'm not going to do that. Maybe that will change one day, but not now.
I think the highlight of that story is that somewhere deep inside the tens, twos, and ones is a fantastic George Carlin joke that we will leave off of. We'll leave off
the show. But not with cards.
We'll leave it right there. Cancel culture is real. Darren, this has been amazing. I sincerely appreciate you taking the time. I hope people check out Fade Rebel as well, because I'm a big fan of that. We didn't even get into the gambling stuff.
I know. Crazy.
Amazing.
Yeah. We're going to, at the Action Network, we're continuing to try to push, you know, gambling content. And I did 2 years of Fade Revel, you know, where you can basically fade me and I'd have to do these stunts. And we generated, you know, 40 million impressions, and I'm really proud of everything we've done. And we have a new treatment coming up soon that is just going to take live watching of gambling to the next level. And I'm really,
I cannot wait. Yeah,
but it's going to be intense.
I cannot wait. I've said this to you on Twitter several times. I look at it like investing. You talked about it at the top of the show that it's safer than investing in some ways. It is. It's legit. It's fun. Congrats on all the success here. It's super cool to talk to you. And I know all the fanboys at Medill that we used to talk to were like, oh, sports business, that's DR. We're in. This is cool.
Thanks, Scott. I really appreciate it.
If you're interested in self-directed investing, from startups to crypto and public markets, my Substack is a great way to learn how professional investors screen, review, and pull the trigger on deals. Join the largest community of micro investors and startup founders on Substack by going to katoon.com.